They sold out. So go to pajamagram.com right now. That's pajamagram.com.
Who's ready for a USDA Prime steak? You won't find USDA Prime beef at the grocery store because it's graded as the highest 2% of beef sold in the country, and its supply is gobbled up by all the finest restaurants. At Surf and Sirloin, located on eastbound Manchester Road, just west of 270, that's what's on the menu. USDA Prime, 14-ounce New York strip, 16-ounce ribeye, 22-ounce porterhouse, or a barrel-cut filet mignon. And with fresh seafood flown in daily, Surf and Sirloin. For reservations, call 822-3637 or through the app Open Table or online at surfandsirloin.com.
With standards of personalized service unmatched in the area and a highly trained staff, the Gatesworth has been designed to provide the most exceptional environment possible. Centrally located just minutes from everything downtown Clayton offers, the Gatesworth features three different restaurants headed by an award-winning chef, weekly musical performances and lectures, a spa, a movie theater, and even a putting green. The Gatesworth, striving to make the lives of residents more convenient, enjoyable, and vibrant. Visit thegatesworth.com for more information.
Grizz Nation, save big on tickets to see the next-gen Grizzlies with the exclusive Grizz Pass. Pay a flat fee of just $69 and guarantee access for up to 7 games per month. You get new games every month, but the price stays the same. Visit GrizzPass.com today for more info.
No.
What
no.
did I...
Remember what I said?
You didn't say
Brenton
anything.
Brenton Vision, yeah. I said, then we'll do Brenton Vision. I said that. And you said, okay. I said, before Scott. Brenton
Did
Vision.
You?
Yeah, I did. Now, this is awkward.
But did you say it out loud
yes.
to me?
No, I did. I did. Let's edit this out.
All right, hang on a second. Here we go.
Radio edit.
And this is where you bump out. With.
Just I don't have anything to
well,
bump
I'll
out
wait.
With.
Well, I'll wait. Grab something. We'll wait.
All right, 1 second. Well, this is embarrassing.
No, you were running around. You were busy. You probably didn't hear me. It's no big deal. It actually is. Dan, please. Dan.
Huh?
Yeah, thank you. It's no big deal. With this, any other show, somebody would be fired.
No, I'm going to pull it up now.
But we have no structure. So, okay, let's just... Tim, how did you say, coming up, just end the news, just anything?
From the 590 The Fan KFNS Studios in Kirkwood, I'm Tim Woodburn. Coming up, hour number two of the large morning show in the afternoon with Frank O'Pinion.
Perfect. Perfect, and we have to tell them why. Okay. We have to tell them why.
Okay.
Yesterday after the show, it's 6:05 or whatever, Limey is walking around going, da 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 da. And I said, I know that song. And I said, I'll finish. Da 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 da. And I said, I know that. That's like a old TV detective show. And Dan said, yeah. He says, yeah, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't that.
No.
Limey and I both said, when I said it's a detective, he said, yeah, kind of like a comedic cop. I said, yeah,
right.
That's it. It's some cop show from the 60s. Da-da-da-da, and Dan said, that's the Odd Couple. I said, no, Dan, that's impossible because I never watched the Odd Couple, and I know the song, da-da-da-da, so it can't be the Odd Couple. Dan said, no, it's the Odd Couple. I said, no, it's not. So Dan said, well, and he took us in his little cubicle, and then with his bad eyesight, he's got his face right on the screen, he pulls up the Odd Couple and played again. Honestly, it's the Odd Couple. So we walk outside, and there's Tim waiting for the paid escort he had coming. And I said, Tim, da-da-da-da-da. Tim said, Odd Couple.
And then I looked at Frank like, you're a moron. Everybody knows that. Here's the best part of that story that you don't know.
What?
Limey walked out before you and Dan did.
Told you.
And I said, what's going on back there? He goes, oh, they're back there. They're listening
Is
to the Odd Couple.
He tipped you off.
And he did. And when you walked out, you start singing it. You go, you know what that is? I'm like, yeah, that's the Odd Couple.
Oh.
Okay,
you know what?
I would have had no idea if Limey hadn't tipped me off.
Really?
All right, that's good. I admire that. That's great. That's very well done. Well done. And here's the best part. I told Dan, I said, Dan, name a number. I'll bet you. If he'd have said $500, I'd have said, you're on. It's not the Odd Couple. He could have made $500. He wouldn't name an amount.
Right.
He wouldn't name a number. And then he pulls it up, and it's the Odd. And what's weird about it is I couldn't get it out of my head. And I da 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 da.
I was
but I've never, I never once watched that show. How the heck can I know that? How can I know that song? Like I said, I know. You know, the Sanford song.
most of those. For the life of me, I don't know how I know that, because I never watched it, so.
That was weird.
Okay, coming up, thank you. Those of you who are holding, I know you're mad at me. Sorry. We'll get to you. Scott Sherman's here. There's only one line open right now. Smart people will jump on it. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Before we bring Scott on board here, I'm going to read you a fantastic testimonial that I got about Britain Vision. It says, Frank, I'm a long-time listener. I have never called in, never emailed, but this is warranted. I want to let you know my wife just had her lens replaced in her left eye by Dr. Tersigny. I may have messed the pronunciation up. Sorry, Doc. At Britain Vision. My wife was nearsighted and was getting worse as time passed. We walk a lot after work, and on weekends I was getting frustrated by pointing something out to her on our walks, and all I can hear is, well, I can't see it, so there's no point in pointing it out and me trying to look at it. He said, I myself had LASIK 12, 14 years ago, I recommended this place where I had it. This was before Britain Vision was here. This is years ago. He said, I recommended that place for my wife, and she went to see my doctor, and unfortunately, she was not a candidate for the LASIK procedure. After hearing about Britain Vision on your show, I suggested that we go see if Britain Vision could do anything. And naturally, as any normal married man, I was met with a lot of resistance. I was persistent, and my wife finally went for an evaluation, an ocular scan at Britain Vision. And on her way home from the scan, she told me, she said that she would likely need both her lens replaced in both eyes, $12,000. I said, do it. Let's do it, because it's life-changing, and you'll be able to see again. More resistance. And she finally agreed. We put half the money down before her scheduled surgery. 5 days before the surgery, Dr. Tersigny called. He called her, and he said that after further analysis of her scan, they wanted to try to replace just the lens in her left eye. That actually was what was keeping her from having great vision, and see if that would put her where she needed to be. And he said, Frank, it worked. My wife now has 20/20 vision at half the cost we originally thought we'd have to pay. I was surprised this day and age that a doctor would be that honest. Dr. Sidney performed the surgery. I'm just letting you know, Britain Vision has a great staff of doctors. Well, Eric, thank you so much for the email, but I already know Britain Vision, and already knew before your email, but I love your feedback and your testimonial about Britain Vision. And folks, here's the moral to this story and what you need to take away from this. I don't care what another doctor may have told you. It doesn't matter, because that other doctor isn't Dr. Jason Britain or isn't one of his associates. That other doctor, with all due respect, is probably not as highly trained and probably does not have the facilities, the equipment that Britain Vision has. If I were you, unless you love being nearsighted or farsighted, or you love wearing glasses or lenses, or you like it, don't go. But if you'd like to get rid of them, and you'd like to know if that's even possible, even though someone else may have, what that other doctor told her was you can't have LASIK, well, she couldn't. But they never mentioned lens replacement, which is what I had, because they probably don't do it. Couldn't have done it on her. Eric, thank you for the email. Folks, here's what you need to know. Britain Vision, B-R-I-N-T-O-N. They're in Creve Coeur. Their phone number is 314-375-2020. 314-375-2020. You tell them you're AM and the PM. Make sure they understand that. They'll appreciate it. We'll appreciate it. And we know you'll do it if you are, because that's what keeps us in business. And get ready for something that very possibly could change your life. And back to the 12 grand, I will just tell you, I don't mind telling you, that's what I paid to have lenses put in. And I took the two-year no-interest plan, so I was able to make 24 payments of $500 a month. If it were $2,000 a month, I'd do it, knowing the results. Changed my life, changed my vision, perfected my vision. Wow, what a difference. And nobody seems to ever talk about lens replacement except when people are 80 years old and have cataracts. That's when they replace the lenses. You don't have to wait for that. If you don't have the money, they'll work something out with you. They'll find a plan, either the two-year thing or something longer with very reasonable interest. get in there, pay the $120, spend 90 minutes, and get the most incredible, thorough eye exam you've ever had in your life. And know it doesn't hurt.
And be 2020 in 2020.
Okay. That's beautiful.
Well done. Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
Brinton Vision, B-R-I-N-T-O-N. Again, 314-375-2020 or BrintonVision.com. There we go. Wow, we got some patient people. One's been waiting almost 20 minutes. That music means that it is time for the rest of the hour with Scott Sherman. You have a legal question. He's your guy. Let's jump right in. We got people holding. Mark's been holding for almost 20 minutes. Mark, thank you for your patience. We appreciate it. I think it'll be well worth the time you have spent. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Merry Christmas, and say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott. Merry Christmas to you folks as well.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Merry Christmas.
I got a little bit of a situation. I had a tenant that wrote me three bad checks. I filed the necessary paperwork with St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. After a couple of weeks, they sent me a letter telling me to go to the city that the checks were written in and file the complaint there. I did that, but the prosecuting attorney's office has told the officer that they can't do anything unless I have the original checks. I contacted the bank. The bank says they don't send the original checks out. They send certified copies. They're telling me they can't do anything, so I'm kind of stuck in limbo. Any thoughts?
No, that sounds exactly right, Scott.
Mark, did you go to the bad check division in Clayton of St. Louis County Prosecutor's Office?
Yes, sir. And they sent out a letter to the tenant, and she didn't respond to it. And then they sent me a letter telling me to go to the police department and file for charges.
So the part I don't understand is not accepting a certified, actual certified copy of the check. That I don't get that, why that wouldn't be sufficient.
I also don't understand when they send that letter out to the check writer, the bad check writer, they only have 10 days to make good on it or charges are supposed to be issued. I don't know why it's your job to run around trying to find the evidence that they would need to prosecute this person.
Mark, were these monthly checks 3 months in a row?
Yes, sir.
How much were they each month?
That's what I was going to ask. What kind of money are we talking about?
$700 each.
Felony.
Over $500, right?
Yeah. And even if it wasn't in the aggregate, I think that's $2,100. I'm pretty good at times three.
Hold on here. Let me, not so quickly. It's
That's right.
Mark, it's 3 months, correct?
$700
a month.
Carry the six.
3 months.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Carry the six.
$14,000.
$14,000.
That's right. I'm sorry. My math is not. If my math was good, I'd have been a doctor.
Now, I'm going to cut right to my shortcut I always take. This person that wrote the checks has heard from who? Just you? Heard from anybody else? Any pressure been put on them by anybody but you?
No.
So no letter from an attorney, nothing to scare him, nothing to say that you have just committed a felony, and unless you want to go to jail, nothing like that from with an attorney letterhead on it, right?
No, just a letter that the St. Louis County prosecuting attorney would have sent out to them.
But didn't.
No, they did.
But yet want Mark to do the legwork.
Yeah, no, this schmuck needs to be scared and realize that, wow, you could go to jail over this.
Well, that's a prosecuting attorney's office, right? They sent
apparently it wasn't strong enough. He might have to pay a couple hundred bucks to get his own attorney to supplement that. I don't know. What do you think?
Mark, you definitely could have a lawyer send a letter. It's civil, and if they ignored the prosecutor's office letter, they may ignore that. I'm a little concerned about the prosecutor's office instructions to you. Don't tell me what city you live in, but is the city that the checks were written in different than the city that you live in and received them?
Yes.
I would go to your local police and say, look, I got frauded in this community. I do business here. Here are copies of the checks from my bank. You can contact my bank. In the regular course of business, these are the scans. This is how this stuff is done. These are NSF checks. I've already gotten a prosecutor letter.
What does that mean,
NSF? Non-sufficient fund.
Oh.
NSF.
Okay.
And I want to make a report. And I want you to contact the people at the prosecuting attorney's office after that report. That's their job. And the police are happy to do their job most of the time. And I don't like what the prosecuting attorney's office did. They sort of gave you the job of being your own investigator. You're the victim. You shouldn't have to do all this legwork. I wouldn't go, and their instruction was go to the city where the checks were written. I just go to the police in the city in which you received them, where you work or where you live, and talk to them, because one of their citizens, you or your business or both, have been frauded, and that they have detectives that do that. And in just about every community, very good ones. The good thing about check cases, bad check cases, they're simple to prove. It's the check was written, and unless somebody forged the check, they bounce the check, and there's the rule, and it's a felony. See, so
in a case like this, in my mind, I always envision a massive stack of papers. They're covered up with stuff like this, and you very gradually are working your way to the bottom, and they send that letter they sent, yet they don't follow up the way they should. Somebody needs to kind of get this thing kicked in the rear, and that's where that other attorney's letter that states, yeah, you've already received a letter from the prosecutor, and now my client is wondering why. Maybe that might
you have 10 days to pay this, or file our or
exactly
take our legal
put a more urgent deadline on it that they're not putting on it. It'd be worth a couple hundred bucks to me to get $2,100.
That's right. And what I didn't want Mark to do is to incur more expense either in the pursuit of getting paid or in the collection of the debt after there was a lawsuit. I'm disappointed in the county prosecutor's bad check division, because that is a great resource when they're doing what they're supposed to do to get people who have been frauded, get their money back without having to incur a third of the money or legal fees in addition to being frauded. So I would do A, talk to your police department tomorrow morning. Talk to a detective in the fraud department or in the bad check division of that department. B, if you're interested in having somebody write a go pay me letter, I will put you in touch with somebody if you send me an email.
Excellent. I appreciate the help.
Okay. Mark, do you have Scott's email address?
Law Office of Scott Sherman at gmail.com.
This guy is very smart. Mark, Merry Christmas. Good luck with this.
Merry Christmas to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Now, a line is open right now. 855-282-8255. 314-821-0590. Scott, thank you for your patience. Welcome to 590, the Fan. Merry Christmas, and say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
No.
Oh,
no, this Scott.
Oh, phone,
geez. Yeah. We've done that bit before.
Hello, Frank. Hello, Scott. And I'm AM and a PM.
Thank you, Scott. Please don't laugh at that bit that's been done 100 times.
Just need some background information. This concerns some property that is located in Colorado, and I just need some background information on it, if you will. This whole thing honestly started back about 1963 when my father and another gentleman purchased 230 acres. And it was a handshake agreement, a handshake partnership. And that's persisted over the years. There is no partnership agreement. There's no LLC, none of that, unfortunately. That said, I have inherited my father's 50%, and the other gentleman, his 50% has been split among his two children. Move the clock ahead to this year, and an oil company would like to put a 16-inch high-pressure natural gas pipeline across the ranch.
Let me give people an idea of 16 inches. Double this right here. You double that to 16 inches right there. So they want to put the oil, the pipe, where?
Across the ranch. So an easement is necessary.
Okay.
And we have concluded, or I thought we had concluded, our negotiating with the oil company, and I have 50% interest in the ranch. I've signed the easement agreement. The son has signed the easement agreement. The daughter refuses to sign the easement agreement.
Why?
I don't know.
What's the upside? What's in this for you? What's the payoff for you by doing this, by signing it? What do you get?
A bunch of money.
Wow. That's what I thought. She don't want a bunch of money? She just wants the land that sits there?
No, I own the land. I just like to have the damages for the easement.
She's not gonna get money? You are, and she's not? Is she gonna get money?
She, She gets 25%, the son gets 25%, and I get 50%.
And she's not interested in that?
She's not interested. So my question is, can the oil company go ahead and construct the line when 75% of the ownership has agreed to it? Or what are the various, you know, general legal principles involved?
I'm going to take a wild guess here that without 100%, no. Scott, it's yours.
Frank's right on that. You can't make, unless there's some kind of partnership agreement, a minority partner accept a deal they don't like. But a couple of things the oil company wants to do. If they can't get the pipeline across your property, they probably can't do the project, right? I mean, not going to go around you somewhere else, correct?
That's probably true. I've talked to them, and I think they probably can go around, but it's probably a lot more expensive for them to do that.
I think that they could go to the local government there or to the state of Colorado or the county and get sort of an eminent domain order where it's a taking. Okay, you won't give us voluntarily. You want to be the little old lady whose house is in the middle of the freeway? We're taking your house. We'll compensate you for it, but you may not get as much as we are negotiating here.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Well, 200, how many acres? 200 and what?
We have 230 acres, and they'd like to run the gas line basically along the perimeter of the land. Okay, so they're really not bisecting it or anything. It's really in an innocuous place as you can possibly put it.
That's a lot of land. Is this land just out in the middle of nowhere? It's not developed or anything? It's just land, right?
It's undeveloped land. It's actually down in southwestern Colorado. It's basically agricultural land, dry land. Some of it's dry land, some of it's irrigated. But actually down in that part of the world, there's an awful lot of natural gas production.
Okay. And if they did this, would it in any way keep from somebody in the future developing a resort or whatever? It wouldn't, would it?
Well, no. At least that's my opinion, because we deliberately located the pipeline at the very extremity of the property, keeping the interior of the property as free as possible for whatever purposes we want to make out of it.
Okay, I don't know what kind of money we're talking about here, but I don't get the part where right now it's bringing no money in. Now there's money that she can make, and 75% of the ownership says, yeah, we'll take that money and there's no problem. It's not going to hurt. I don't understand why she doesn't want this money. And I guess my next question would be, is it possible that you and the other guy can buy her part from her?
Well, we just floated that idea past her last night. So I don't have an answer to that.
So you might be able to do that.
Yeah, we might be able to do that.
Okay.
Scott, and not only might Scott be able to buy her out sort of in a negotiation, there are a couple of legal doctrines I just want to throw the buzzwords at Scott to talk to a real estate lawyer in Colorado. One is called a partition action. This is where you go to court and let's say she says, no, I'm an environmentalist or I just don't want to sell. I don't want it on there and I'm not selling. So if you can't voluntarily get her to make a deal, there's something called a partition action where you can have the court forced this project or this land in a manner that Scott could and his partner, her brother or something, could pay her in the court and make her sell. The other is a doctrine called the doctrine of waste. Not the kind of waste that we think of, like a toilet waste, but you could say to the court like that, she's wasting the beneficial use of this property. There's a great deal on the table for all of the people that are co-owners or you have an undivided one half interest. The other guy has 25. She's got 25. You're to our detriment wasting the best use of this land, which is the sale of this easement to the refinery, to the oil company. So there are a couple of legal doctrines, partition, waste, where you might be able to force her through the court, and then the oil company has eminent domain, which could be used to take your property, and you might get less because they might be offering you a fantastic deal. So I would get a real estate lawyer, you and your like-minded partner, and see if you can make a deal with her that would not waste your money, the court's time, and more time, before the eminent domain hammer comes down, because they're great eminent domain lawyers, but traditionally you will not get as much in that.
So that's what somebody needs to explain to her.
Then you will.
This is one
of
those deals where you can take this, or somebody's going to take this from you, and then you get next to nothing. Has anybody put it to her that way?
I don't know. I certainly haven't. In my discussion with the pipeline company, they did mention that they do have the eminent domain right. My question also would be, if the two of us voluntarily submit the eminent domain, does that change the value that we could does that change the value of the compensation, and she would get what the court would say, and we would get what the old company would say?
Well, it's possible, but I would say the word voluntary is not really in the vocabulary of eminent domain. It's a taking. Okay. We're participating. Great. We're running you over anyway. What happens is that you then have to go out and get in some very, very excellent eminent domain lawyers, but you'll have to share with the eminent domain firm the difference between what the pipeline company would offer you in eminent domain, which would probably be significantly less than the free market negotiations, and what you ultimately would get. So timely, it's more adversarial, and in the end, I think it defeats the purpose of what she's trying to do. She cannot stop the progress of this pipeline. This is not some governmental body where she can have a veto or she can tie it up in a committee. It's coming.
There are so
get the money.
There are so many pieces here that I don't have, missing pieces that would make all the difference in how this shakes out, how it would be answered. For example, I don't know what this property is worth. I don't know if it has the potential to be bought by a big developer. It could be completely worthless. There are hundreds, thousands of acres in Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. They're not worth anything. They're never going to be worth anything. There's land in Missouri. It's just going to always be just open land. Maybe somebody farms it. Is this valuable property?
Well, currently, the ranch is leased out as a cow pasture.
Okay.
And there is some raising of hay on it. It is dry land pasture for maybe, I'm very serious about this, somewhere between 20 and 200 head of cattle.
So it's generating income.
Yeah, it is.
You had an appraisal, Scott, of the her share or her section of this property, or if you had the pipeline put in, what it would do to diminish the property? It might be a great deal, or sound like a great deal, but Frank's right. Until you know what the baseline of the value of the property is, you're not going to know if the oil company, the pipeline company, is offering you what fair market value is. That really might be the part that you and your like-minded partner, are missing. If this is a great deal, you need to tell your not like-minded partner, it's not a company. What it is she has a 25% undivided interest in that land.
We also don't know her financial status. Does she have money? Is she worth money? Is she wealthy? Does she need money? What's the deal?
Well, frankly, she has more money than the other two of us combined. Her husband is an exploration geologist who has done very well over the years.
Okay, so she doesn't really need whatever this is they're going to pay. I don't know.
No.
Do you know? Have they made an offer? Do you know what the amount is?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly what it is.
Could you mind just telling us? We don't know who you are.
It's for a total of $60,000.
A year?
No, one-time payment.
One-time payment was 60. So, 30 for you, 15 for her, 15 for her brother. One time. She doesn't need 15 grand. She's just being a jerk. She's just being a jerk.
I would retain a real estate lawyer for the simple purpose of communicating with her the following. Eminent domain is coming. They're coming. You can't stop this. You can't get an injunction.
Take the 15 or be prepared.
Or maybe not the 15. Maybe there's more money there. Or maybe there's a lot less in eminent domain. But it needs to be very clear to her that she cannot stop this project by just not agreeing. Because a lot of other landowners, hundreds of them along the pipeline, either have already agreed or are having the hammer come at them. And when you're in an eminent domain deal, your negotiating position is a lot less strong. You just don't know exactly if the offer is great or not. I would retain for $1,000. I'd have a real estate lawyer.
You know who does know, though? Her husband.
Her husband.
Yeah, her husband knows. And maybe he's the one who told her, nah, yeah, you don't like to take that.
I mean, maybe they're, you know, maybe
he may have said it's worth more than that. They should pay more. Maybe,
but they need, but they need to be communicating that to the other
co-owners. Rather than just say no.
What is your, just ask her, why not? Is it environmental? Is it personal? Is it financial? What's your reason? Because eminent domain in the pipeline, they're coming. What's your reason for this? Not enough money, or there's no money in the world? Because you can't stop this kind of progress.
All right, we got other people. We got to run, but I'll tell you what, Scott, this is a great. This is the first time we've had this particular situation. That's a good one. Three partners for a piece of property. One's got 50. The other have 25% of piece. Do you have Scott's email address if you want to have him take a closer look at this or maybe send you to somebody?
I do indeed. It's law offices of Scott Sherman.
No, buddy, you almost had it. You put an S on offices. It's a singular office.
Okay.
You were close. Law office. Scott, thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Good luck with this. Good luck with her.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's a long soap opera, trust me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know what? It never failed. Partnerships. Partnerships.
Hey, Frank, I got a trivia question real quick.
Yeah.
Do you know which amendment of the Constitution the eminent domain takings clause comes from?
I have no idea.
The Fifth Amendment.
No, I know.
The same one of the right to remain silent and due process?
Now I know.
The Fifth Amendment.
We have a line open because we helped Scott, I hope. 855-282-8255, 314-821-0590. Up next, Frank. There's an unusual name. Frank, Merry Christmas. Welcome to 590 The Fan, and say hello to Scott Sherman.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Sherman. I hope you have a God-blessed day.
Thank you, Frank. Same to you, sir.
Anyway, I called today to talk to Frank. But I have to ask you a question, Mr. Sherman.
Yes, sir.
A good friend of mine has got a moon rock. And I asked my Google Home how much a moon rock was worth and why he thought it was a moon rock. Well, they said it had no iron in it. It was not magnetic. He's looking for a place to sell it. This rock weighs like 13 pounds. And when I asked Google, they said, well, it would cost $53,000 a gram just to go to the moon and pick it up and bring it back here.
How did he get it?
He said his father was an excavator over on Clayton Road in the 60s, and they dug their trenching tool down 8 feet and found it when it came up in the bucket, and his father removed it, looked at it, and he said it was like an orangish-black-looking rock. And it was kind of flat-looking.
Well, that's not a moon. A moon rock would come up from the moon. It'd be a part of the moon. This would be a meteorite or some piece of a meteor or something, right?
Right.
Okay, it's not a moon rock. It's a big difference.
It has to be a moon rock because it's non-magnetic. It has no iron in it. Okay. And only meteorites are iron in content.
Okay. Has a geologist examined it and designated it or certified it as anything? Or is this just what he thinks it is?
He called the science company, the science center, and he hasn't got a call back from them yet since the bad weather. And he's wondering who to call in order to speak to somebody who might be an interested person in owning this gem.
Okay,
this
is probably not, from Uranus.
This could be. This is not really a legal question. This is just who do I sell this rock to? I say nobody because it's worthless right now.
The provenance on it, the history on it, getting it verified that it's extraterrestrial is the key, because otherwise it's just a stupid rock.
Right.
And so until someone who's got the expertise to authenticate this, then it's
worthless.
Then it's up to the market. I think there are things that you cannot sell. Like I know that there is stuff that you cannot sell. But I don't think
meaning it's illegal.
It might be illegal, but not something that comes from the sky and lands on the planet Earth. I think that's fair game.
Right.
But I do think that there were restrictions on stuff, because how much moon rock business did they bring back?
It's not a moon rock.
It's not
something they brought back.
Well, now wait. Let's say it came from. How would it have gotten from the moon? It can't leave the moon.
It's not a moon rock.
It's not from the moon.
It's part of a meteor.
At least it's not from Earth's moon.
Yeah. But this is not really a legal issue here. It's just how do I find out what this is worth issue.
Right. The only moon rocks are the ones that the astronauts brought back.
Right.
And those aren't in public hands,
they're not
private hands.
They're not under the ground.
And I think those things, because of NASA and whatever, I don't think you can sell those. I might be wrong. But this is not one of those things. No. It's not like Wally Schirra brought back a moon rock or Neil Armstrong.
You know what's amazing about this is when that meteor flew through Troy, Missouri and landed in a farmer's field,
yeah,
that they had the capability, scientists at St. Louis, of determining literally within like a half square mile of exactly where 2-inch fragments of that meteor landed in St. Louis. Can you believe that?
That's fantastic. That's science. Yeah. I'm not a science guy. So, I'm pro-science, but I don't understand.
So, Frank, the answer is we have no idea because it's not a geological show or NASA or anything like that. I'm sorry, but it's not really a legal question. It'd be no different than how do I authenticate a signed baseball bat that I've got that's supposed to be from, you know, Honus Wagner, whatever.
Expert.
Yeah. So,
my friend always likes to talk about Honus Wagner. When he forgets what he's saying or doing, he says, Honus Wagner, right?
Well, that's what I do when I don't know what I'm talking about, like I just did. I said Honus Wagner. Is there anything else we could help you with?
Yes, sir. I am really in search of your autograph. Now, how does a blind man authenticate an autograph? Sounds like a blind joke by sighted people.
Are you blind?
I'll ask my wife if you wrote on it or not. Anyway, it would be a St. Louis Cardinals baseball hat that my wife owns,
yeah,
on the $50 jobs.
Yeah.
And it has Charlie Brennan's autograph on there. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in joining Charlie and welcoming my wife into the community. She's a librarian.
First of all, who's Charlie Brennan? Who is that?
Somebody on Camel X, another station
I don't pay attention to other radio stations. I think you're messing with us. I hope, because this is not actually a real legal question either, and I don't want to be rude, but I'm glad you called. And are you blind?
Yeah, I wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas, Frank. I hope you and yours have a good one.
You too, Frank. I appreciate that. Same to you. Thank you for calling.
Have a good one.
Uh huh. This is picking up where we left off with those calls yesterday.
He didn't actually answer any of your questions.
I think he's deaf.
He didn't actually. He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. Let's go. We got a line open now. Now that we've cleared that up, 855-282-8255, 314-821-0590. Angie, welcome to 590 The Fan. Merry Christmas and say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott Sherman, and Merry Christmas to you. I'm AM and the PM.
Thank you.
I have two questions, if I can. One of them is, can somebody call you on the phone, and when you say, yes, this is me, can they say, you've been served, and then hang up on you?
Can I take a stab at this? No. Am I right?
You're correct.
Yeah.
Personal service. You have to have that thing either delivered to you or to a roommate, or someone that lives in your house over the age of 16. Or, you can have it if you dodge it.
I bet there's one you're missing.
I got a great story.
Let me hear all the ways you think you can be served.
If you are dodging service, you can have it thrown in your direction.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If you're... give me the other one.
Not verbally over the phone. Though.
No.
If you visually see somebody through the door of their home or through the window of their home, or if they identify themselves
at the door
and they refuse to open the door, you can read it aloud to them and then put it on the ground and then put on the process of service was read aloud to them verbally through a door.
Yeah, not on the telephone.
Right, no, it has to be in person.
My question about that is, how do you prove you read it verbally to them?
Well, here's the best part.
They can say no, they didn't.
Here's the best part of that. They can say no, they didn't, but what they would have to do is they would have to file a motion denying that they were served, and then when they show up in court for that motion, then you serve them.
Oh, okay.
Or you hire a lawyer that enters for the special purpose of quashing the summons and saying that service wasn't proper, then you haven't.
Angie, the answer to your question is no.
Okay. I got a great little story. It takes about 60 seconds.
Do it.
I did work for a guy that was trying to collect a debt from some person. This person that the client hired me, he knew that she was staying at this particular house. I had a special process server, like the thing that Tim go over to the house, knocked on the door, and some guy came out and chased my guy and scared him half to death. He called me, he goes, what do I do? And I'm like, what did you see? He's like, well, the window was open, and I saw blonde hair sitting on the couch when I went up to the front door. I go, do you think it's her? He goes, oh, maybe. He had a picture of her. I said, go back to the house, look in the window, don't peeping, and see if you can match up the face. He calls me on the phone, he goes, I'm looking at the door. The window's open. Yeah, it's her. I go, throw it at her. He threw the summons into the house and hit her in the head. Summons, oh. Service, good.
Wow.
It's one of my favorites. Wow. So watch out. Close your windows, Angie. But okay. Service on the phone is not good. I suggest this. If someone has called you about that, check CaseNet. Are you a Missouri resident?
Yes.
Check on CaseNet, case.net. And put your name in there and see if there's actually an active case. And this might be your opportunity to get ahead of being served. And if you need a little guidance on that, send me an email. But that service, not good. Throwing it through the window at a girl on a couch is good.
Okay. And can I ask you another question?
Sure.
You know why you can ask another question? Because I think you sound like a really nice person. Go ahead.
Why, thank you. I call you all the time, and you've helped me out tremendously with issues legally. The thing that my partner's mom is an onset of dementia coming on, so he's moved back into her house. The house is only in her name. But what happens if she ends up going into a home? How do we have to go through a lawyer to get the house put into his name? Or can the Medicare or Medicaid, when they start paying for stuff, make him sell the house?
I wouldn't wait for all that. If you know what's coming, I'd take care of it now, Scott.
She have capacity. She know what's happening.
She still does, yeah.
Do it now and meet with not only someone that does those kind of quit claim deeds, but make sure that person knows about the rules with Medicare, the spend down, and also any kind of estate planning. So if you need somebody,
get a lawyer?
Absolutely. It's not a big deal. Expensive, and it is worth its weight in preventing headaches. So send me an email. I got somebody I know that would be great for this.
Okay.
Not expensive.
Okay. I will do that.
Right, Angie, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Angie.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you for listening. Okay. She sounded nice, didn't she?
Very nice.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Is it against the law if you're trying to serve somebody and you go, I have flowers and candy for a Deborah Fillermeyer, and she opens the door and goes, serve.
And not if you have flowers and candy.
So you can do it that
Why
way.
Wouldn't you?
So you can do that.
Well, if you have flowers and candy, I mean, isn't it true?
Just curious.
I would say Candy Graham for Mongo.
Okay, but you can't do it unless you actually have that. So
you wouldn't be lying.
Okay. And it can be an $8 rose, little cheap roses or something.
Sounds fine to me. As long as you're not misleading her about if you didn't have flowers and candy, I think that would
and
be
And then fun. When she opens the door and you have the flowers and candy, you go, are you ever a Thiller Malang? She goes, yeah, serve. Here's the flowers.
I love that.
The best way to do it, and I've actually discussed this with other PIs, is to say, I have a delivery for you, and have their name on a label on a box and be holding that box.
Oh, so you don't even have to pay for the flowers.
Yeah, you don't need any flowers. Just need a box.
Okay.
And put a mailing label and say, I have a personal delivery for you. And then people's going to, their greed or their curiosity, 99% of the time they'll open the door and see what it is.
This show could absolutely be a 3-hour show. We're full of calls. We have a few minutes left. Let's jump right to, I believe, Judy is next. She's been holding. Thank you, Judy. Thank you for your patience. Merry Christmas. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Judy. How are you?
I got a 2-part question.
Okay.
My mother recently passed away. She did have a will. Is it wise to file that will in probate court? How do you do it? And does a lawyer need to do it?
We are really short on time. You just take it wrong with it.
You have to file that will in probate court. That's the thing. The difference between a will and a trust is wills must be probated. You should communicate with a lawyer. You don't have to. If you are the executor, you should call the probate court and say, I have been appointed the executor of my mom's estate. How do I do this? And they're very nice, and they'll talk you through it. If the estate is valuable, I would have a lawyer involved in walking you through it. But the first call would be call the probate court in the county where she passed away and ask how this probating of this will has to be done.
Okay.
Second question.
The next part of my question was, she has her house that was TOD to the five children. Does that will take precedent over the TOD on the real estate?
My answer would be no. Scott.
Frank knows that one. It's no. The real estate, or what you call non-probate transfers, vehicles that are transferable on death, bank accounts that are payable on death, and this, which would be a, I guess you would, you know, it's either a,
sorry.
Sorry, Judy. Sorry you had to be a part of that.
What do you mean?
A beneficiary deed where her death then changes the ownership of that real estate. That is the rock, paper, scissors that beats the will. This is a great way, as sad a situation as it is, to save the expense of probate. Non-probate transfers, real estate, vehicles, boats, bank accounts, all anything that has a title that can be moved should all be done OD, or transferable or payable, so it avoids probate.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Judy. Merry Christmas.
You have a Merry Christmas, and thank you.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Wow, the women like you today. We probably have enough time to help one more person. That person is going to be Brian. Brian, Merry Christmas. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Hi, Brian. Merry Christmas.
Got about 3 minutes. Take it.
Okay, I'll try to make this as quick as possible. So my son is 18. He had a cell phone through what I thought was my ex-wife, and it turned out that she actually put herself and him on her brother's plan. And about a year ago, maybe two years ago, his phone was broken, it wasn't working, so I just got him a phone and put him on my plan. And recently got a text message from the ex-brother-in-law stating that he received a bill from his cell phone company for $1,200 when I put my son on my plan, and it wants me to pay that $1,200 bill.
What's the $1,200 for? What's the charge for? Getting out, trying to get out of a contract or something?
I guess so.
It sounds like the buyout price of a contract that had another couple of years left on it.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, because he said they made him pay off the remainder of his contract.
Well, nobody checked and with nobody bothered to check with the ex-brother-in-law, whoever it was, before they did this, right? And they didn't bother to go, hey, if we do this, is it going to cost you money, right?
Right.
I think you should pay it, Scott.
I don't think Brian has to pay it. What Brian did does not...
It's a brand new transaction.
And whatever contract is between this brother-in-law, ex-brother-in-law, and his cell phone carrier, Brian's not a party to. He's not a third-party beneficiary of it. All he was doing, because he didn't have knowledge of it, was replacing his son's phone.
I'd like to split it, at least.
Because, well, I think this is a legal show. This is not an ethics show. I mean, this is an ethics show. That'd be fine.
But I think I'd say split it.
You know, I say, legally, tell him to stick it. What did you do that would cause any kind of harm that, you know, you had any obligation to? Whatever deal that they made on their cell phone, you didn't intentionally do that. You didn't have a knowledge of it.
Didn't intentionally do it, but the guy is getting stuck with the bill. Brian, if you will it break you to pay half of it?
No, and I that's not even part of the conversation, really. He basically just said, hey, I got this bill. I've already contacted a lawyer.
Well, screw him. Okay, you know what? If he's going to start with the lawyer thing right away, screw him.
Right.
That come get me.
That changes everything. Yeah.
Did you get a letter from the lawyer? Why didn't the lawyer contact?
Bully.
If he hired a lawyer, why didn't the lawyer contact?
He's a bully.
No,
you know what? Now that I know
that, he actually did.
Don't even pay half of it. I don't like him already. These people run for every little personal family issue. He could have called you and worked it out. Screw it.
And you know what? Legally, if Mother Teresa had called you, Brian, I'd have said the same thing. Screw her.
Yeah.
Don't pay.
Well, you go to hell.
But
for that.
This is not the heaven and hell show.
I know. Oh, we are out of time.
I don't see any legal obligation by Brian to do that. Plus, did you guys have joint custody of the debt?
We're gone. We're out.
All right.
We're gone. Out of time. Brian, thank you. Merry Christmas. Out of time. We will do this again. We won't do it next Thursday because we won't be here next Thursday. We'll be off Wednesday and Thursday of next week. We'll do it the following Thursday because we are here January 2nd, day after New Year's Day.
Next year.
Scott Sherman, everybody.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Right, there you go.
Thank you.
What a fast hour. Coming up, You know what? It's the news, followed by the Playhouse, and you know all that goes with that, so I don't have to tell you. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
Happy holidays. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. Tulsi Gabbard is giving an explanation for her impeachment vote last night. The Hawaii Democratic Congresswoman voted present, meaning she was neither for or against impeaching President Trump. Instead, the 2020 White House hopeful believes voters should decide whether or not Trump gets to stay in office. The House has approved the big North American trade deal. The USMCA is one of President Trump's top priorities. It would